It all began when one night an earthquake struck our little town. Back then, our town was the quintessential Australian town, not too far from the city, but far enough into the country to hear a symphony of crickets at night and witness the stars set the heavens alight. Back then, the history of our town had begun in the colonial era, during the time of the gold rush. In the hope of discovering quick fortunes, miners would flock to this town and stay for long periods of time as they dug up the surrounding lands for the precious metal. Stories began in this town and were passed down for family generations. Stories of the fevers that broke out in the mining camps and the bloody conflicts that arose whenever gold was discovered. The buildings in the town were made mostly of stone, and each chip and scratch told a story of its own, having survived many harsh years of scorching sun, sandy wind, and occasional rains. But in due course, the excitement of the gold rush departed as quickly as it came, and the town was dragged unwillingly into the 21st century, where it became no more active and vibrant than the arid land on which it sat. Aside from the travellers who would stop in at the town bakery and refuel at the petrol station before continuing on their merry way, there was not much activity to be seen on the streets. Life in the digital age was very different to the old days. Our pursuits back then were selfish and mundane, and our lifestyle was hardly peaceful. John, our son, would always play his Xbox, and Emma, my wife, would be in a constant flurry, marketing her business online. Back then, mindless entertainment and income streams dictated the way that we lived, and in retrospect, these were often activities which allowed us to hide from the realities of life before us at the time. All things considered, life was mundane, until the day that everything changed. Like a rolling storm cloud, disturbing news from the outside world cast a thick shadow over the humdrum reality of our little town. We were sitting around the TV one night, and the breaking news anchor appeared on the screen to broadcast the news that Russia was in the process of invading large parts of Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and Northern Africa. The most shocking aspect of it all was that Russia had taken unprecedented amounts of territory so quickly. Thousands of paratroopers had been dropped over Eastern Europe, while heavy tanks had ploughed through Poland, bringing back memories of the German Blitzkrieg in World War II. In the Middle East, Russia's S-400 missile systems had unrivaled strategic coverage of the Middle East, while their air force and drones took tactical control of the skies. And in Africa, Russian submarines controlled the coastal areas as troops were deployed to the shore. Everything happened so quickly, and Australia suddenly looked very small and very alone. And as the daily and nightly reports began to come through, we watched on and we saw government after government fall to the growing Russian power. I clearly remember as a family we would get home in the evenings and turn on the TV to gather around and watch the latest. Every night there would be a new development. But as each night passed, our hope began to wane as we realised that the situation was only getting worse and worse. No substantial power could front up to this level of Russian expansion. It had become painfully apparent that Russian war technology was unrivaled. Suddenly, one night as we were watching the news, the TV lost its signal. And then within seconds, everything suddenly lost power, and the room became silent and dark. Much time could be spent describing the utter horror that we experienced from that moment on, as the entire world plunged into darkness. The immediate effect on our town was one of confusion, as people gradually realised that the problem was impacting almost every form of communication and technology. Eventually, fear turned into panic, and within days, panic had turned into anarchy. The state of affairs that settled upon our town was one that we never want to remember. But our story has another purpose. Many years passed, during which time the entire globe experienced this time of trouble. But it wasn't until one night that everything changed for my family. By this stage, our lives had adapted, and we still lived in a state of hopelessness. We were barely surviving in rags and barely living off the land. Our home had become a fortified cell which had been modified to exist without electricity, plumbing, water or gas, which had all failed to work over time. And as my family and I slept, a loud grinding noise broke the silence. The noise increased in volume and intensity, and suddenly the ground began to shake violently. I was immediately thrown from my bed and began to hear the stone walls around me cracking and crumbling. We stumbled out of the house and onto the street just in time to see our stone house collapse as the seismic shaking intensified. We grasped onto a small tree and struggled to stand as we watched our neighbours also running out into the street. And within seconds, the earth on which we stood lurched forwards, and with an enormous crash, every standing structure collapsed. No one was left standing. And then I remember nothing more of that night. The next thing I remember was the warmth on my back. As I came to, I realized that the morning sun had dawned and I was still lying on the road. I couldn't yet open my eyes, but I could hear voices in the distance. But oddly enough, there was no panic, no crying or whimpering. The voices were soft and comforting. In fact, barely audible was an excited buzz. And then I felt it. A searing pain on my face as I realized that my face had obviously been hurt as I'd hit the ground. I groaned as the pain seemed to get worse. And then next to me I heard Emma, who had also gained consciousness and was a few meters away. "Michael, are you okay?" "Yeah," I groaned. "Where's John?" Emma said. She paused and looked around. "John is walking towards us with a group of people." "That's really strange," she said. "In the middle of that group is two men dressed in white, and they're shining like the sun." At this point, I wondered if Emma had been knocked a bit too hard. Not quite sure what Emma was on about, I attempted to lift my head and open my eyes, but to no avail. The best I could do was listen to the voices as they got closer and closer. And then I heard John speaking to someone in the group. "Here's Mum and Dad, can you help them too?" I felt someone take hold of my shoulder and roll me over. And instantly the pain left my body. Instantly I could see. I looked up and saw two men dressed in white and shining, just as Emma had described. Leaning forwards, one of the men offered me his hand. "Take my hand, stand up and follow me," he said. I grasped his hand and held on tight as he lifted me up and proceeded to do the same with Emma. "Thank you. What is your name?" I asked. "I am a saint who has come on behalf of King Jesus." Utterly amazed at what they had done, I watched as they proceeded to walk down the street and restore and heal those who had been injured by the earthquake. Excited by the presence of these two men who were clearly supernatural, we all joined the crowd and followed the two saints as they walked throughout the streets, healing those who had been injured by the quake. Within a few hours, the two saints had gathered all the townsfolk together in the center of the town and proceeded to talk. "Men, women, and children, we have come on behalf of Jesus Christ, who has been crowned King in Israel and will be King of the earth." And from that moment forwards, they began to teach us about the ways of God. After having experienced years of hopelessness and fear, these saints gave us comfort and hope. They talked about the God of the Bible, which most of us had heard of in various ways but had never known. They talked about the kingdom which was currently being set up on earth. And this is where, when we look back now, we realize that the dawn of a new age was being ushered in by the saints under Christ. The saints were pivotal in the effort to restoring and rebuilding and educating. And as days turned into weeks, we began to build small agricultural communities similar to that of a Jewish kibbutz. As weeks turned into months, we began to build orchards and homes to live in. Throughout this process of restoration, the people of the surrounding lands began to hear about the monumental work that was being done by the saints, the miracles, the teachings of God. Just as the saints had restored our communities and given us hope, they also became naturally accepted as de facto rulers in most cases. We had heard of reports in other lands where the people had attempted to remove the saints, only to find the severest of judgments come upon their own lands. But here, in our little communities, the saints became the pillar of our society. They were both greatly respected and feared, and very much loved by the mortals of the surrounding lands. They were respected because of their own example of respect for others. They were feared because they had the power to affect severe judgment. But most of all, they were loved and admired by the people of the lands they inhabited. They were loved because they were consummate examples of God's perfect character. To the sinners over which they reigned, the saints were abundant in mercy. To the poor, the saints were gracious and generous. To those who were afflicted, the saints afforded physical restoration and peace of mind. One of their most striking characteristics was their ability to discern the thoughts and intents of the heart of man. This first became apparent to me a few years later when I was fortunate to get a job on a farm working as a foreman, directing the labourers on behalf of the farm manager. It was a rich farm and the harvest was always strong due to a small river which ran through the centre of the farm. My manager, the farmer, made good use of that water and chose to divert much of it to his orchards to allow his cattle to drink and trample through the excess water. Downstream, however, new neighbours had arrived from a different country and had started to plant seeds to grow crops. However, the new farmer started to use the same river to supply his crops. Well, as the farm downstream grew, so did his requirement for more water, and the two interests began to converge. Over time, the tension grew between the two farmers, as the upstream farmer continued to use much of the water and the downstream farmer struggled to provide water for his crops. For weeks, the tension increased between my manager and the farmer downstream, and one morning, the farmer downstream had had enough and came to confront my manager. We only found out about it because some of the workers heard a commotion near the hay sheds and found the two men yelling at each other. The argument had escalated quickly and some of the senior workers had intervened to break them apart. As the farmers were restrained, it was clear that a formal judgment on the matter was needed. And so, after a few minutes of heated discussion, it was agreed that both farmers would need to go to a saint to resolve the matter. Well, it was widely known that a saint was going to be passing through the closest town the following morning, and it was agreed by both parties that they would meet there and then to discuss and resolve the incident once and for all. Well, the next morning as I walked to the farmer's homestead, the early rays shone through the trees and I walked towards the door and knocked. I was invited in by his wife, who was hurriedly fossicking around, preparing a small basket of gifts, first fruit of the farm that might be given not just to the saints, but also to those who were needy, as was customary when one entered the town. When I found the manager, he was dressed in his finest, as if he were about to greet a king. He took the gifts from his wife, and within an hour we had departed and arrived at the town where the saint was said to be staying. Initially, we were nervous. However, the meeting with the saint was surprisingly warm and short. Word had it that the saints were capable of both issuing severe judgment and showing limitless mercy, but the outcome was always righteous, and as we finally met the saint and considered this, our hearts were fearful yet hopeful. An hour passed and the matter was resolved. Both farmers had agreed on an outcome which had been decided by the saint. They knew what was expected of them, and they knew what would happen if they didn't comply, and they both agreed that the outcome was right. From that moment on, the two farm managers agreed on the use of the river to support their farms. And so the work of the saints was an indispensable centrepiece of our society. They were respected as kings, yet they were accessible to all people. When conflicts arose, a saint would be sought to adjudicate. When a child felt terminally ill, a saint would be able to help revive the child and give hope to the family. But these roles, although vital, were perhaps secondary in nature to the real purpose of the saints: to teach the people about God, to fill the earth with the knowledge of His glory. And they did, and they continue to do this in many ways. Every few nights after a working day, we would meet in the centre of the village under the bright starry sky around a crackling bonfire to reminisce over the last few days and listen to the saints as they talked about God and King Jesus. They taught us how to pray to God. They taught us songs about Zion. And they told us about the temple which was under construction, the city which would become the centre of the earth. The difference to the terrible years of the past was incomprehensible. Joy and peace now thrived. As mortals, we still sinned, we still lost our temper, we still coveted, we still hated, we still had the propensity to do evil every day. But the help of the saints was abundant, for their own experience with sin allowed them to empathize with our struggle. One particular evening, my family and I had finished our dinner and we were heading to the communal meeting place where the village folk normally gathered in the presence of one or two saints at the end of the day. Normally, as we walked down towards the centre of the village, the sun would be setting, the warmth receding, and the humdrum activities of the day had slowed. The crisp air would carry the scents of various dishes as groups of families and friends would be finishing up their meals and preparing to walk down to the centre of the town to gather around and listen to the words of the saints. However, tonight was slightly different. As we neared the centre of the town, we found that some families had already finished their meals, and in the distance we could hear an excited buzz. As we walked closer, we could see that the saints in particular looked quite excited. Just as we arrived, one of the saints signalled for everyone to be silent and he began to talk. With great joy, he explained that the temple had finally been built in Zion. Finally, mortals from all around the world could travel to Israel and go up to the temple in Zion to worship God and perhaps, even meet the King himself. I remember all those present reacted with great joy, and the worship and fellowship and praise lasted long into the night as we contemplated the dawn of a new era of peace. Well, after the singing, we mingled and talked around the fire, and it was during this night that our family were thrilled and honoured to have the chance to speak with one of the saints. We wanted to go up and see the temple, and so we talked about it with the saint. We spoke about the land and perhaps even meeting the king. We talked about the logistics of getting to Israel and then the pilgrimage once in the land. The saint told us about the highway that passes through Israel, running from Egypt in the south to Assyria in the north. And he explained that the highway wasn't just a highway for economics and trade. This was a highway that pilgrims could travel on as they came to worship in Israel. The geography of the land had changed significantly. In fact, the whole Middle East had changed. The Nile had dried up, and the Gulf of the Egyptian Sea had receded hundreds of miles. The great Euphrates had been split into many streams, allowing pilgrims to walk over it in sandals. From Jerusalem was flowing two great rivers, one towards the south and one towards the north. And as the saint began to talk about the land, we could see a glimmer of excitement in his eye. For the land, which was once parched desert and arid terrain, had turned into an incredible paradise, just like the Garden of Eden had once been. Every manner of fruit and trees, fir trees and pine trees, creeks and rivers flowing in both summer and winter. Everything was green and overflowing with beauty and colours of creation at its finest. Precious minerals like gold and stones like onyx could be found across the land. While the flora was stunning, the fauna was just as impressive, for the kingdom was rich with many beautiful and friendly animals who lived peaceably throughout the land. The saint spoke of some amazing stories of children who had interacted and played with what had previously been dangerous predators. In one story, he recalled seeing a small group of 3 to 4 year old children flock a wandering lion. A couple of girls walked alongside the lion and ran their fingers through its mane and felt its soft hair, while a boy jumped onto the lion's back and grabbed hold of its mane. All the while it continued to strut along, twitch its tail once in a while, and ingratiate its company with a thunderous purr. But what made this place visually inviting and welcoming was the plots of land and the homes and the estates. As you went on your pilgrimage through the land in the evenings, you would pass many a green field surrounded by fences, which would cast long shadows across the fields, and in those paddocks you would see flocks of sheep and sometimes cattle, and behind them you would see the home of an Israelite, with smoke rising from the chimney on a wintry evening and warm light emitting through the windows. And during the day, as you continued on your pilgrimage, you would pass other pilgrims leading camels which had come from the south and were carrying all kinds of gold and incense and oils to bring to the land of promise to worship God in Zion. The cities of the land of Israel were packed with not just local Israelites, but with pilgrims and Gentiles who were travelling through the land who had come to worship God. And as we continued listening to the saint through to the early hours of the morning, the land of Israel truly sounded like a land of wonders, and that night we resolved as a family to travel to the land and go up to the temple.